Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021. This is the after. I hope you all had a good Christmas. And I mean, there was the AMA on that day, so I spoke to you then. But nonetheless, for those of you who didn't take part in that, I hope that you had a lovely Christmas day, and I hope you spent it with loved ones, and that it lived up to tradition. Hopefully. So we're back with Millennial now, and this is night 16. And 2 hours from now, I will have Imperium Press. And then 4 hours from now, Brittain Schaffer. And 6 hours from now, Milo. But first of all, it's Endeavour. So Endeavour, welcome back to Millennial. I think you've been on the past 3 years, or definitely past 2 years.
It's the past 4 years now, actually. The first time I was on was 2018, so this is my fourth appearance. You know, it's a Christmas tradition. I think I tell this joke every year, but Millennial is the far-right Christmas party, and, you know, I'm glad that I've become a regular guest. So it's a marathon, man. I don't know how you do it, but it's become a Christmas tradition, so you're doing great work.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So yeah, well, there are only two tonight, tomorrow night, and then Morgoth the night after. So I didn't actually intend to do these nights, but so many people wanted to appear that I ended up adding these two nights. So here we go. So welcome. Do you want to introduce yourself briefly, just for anyone who doesn't know you?
Yeah, I'm a content creator. I'm still on YouTube somehow, but I'm mostly transitioning over to Odyssey. I make videos on things that are happening, so political philosophy, history, culture, and various things like that. I've been doing it for about 4 years now, and you can check out my channel if you'd like to see more.
Excellent. All right. And that is linked below, so that's fine. You wanted to speak about the changes that you've noticed over the last year. Now, I think a lot of people have said that this has basically been a continuation of 2020, and that in some cases that they didn't really have that much fresh to say compared to last year. But you said that this year has been a real eye-opener for you.
Yeah, because I think that 2020 was a year where we were all trying to figure out what the hell is going on. It was a huge turning point. I think everyone would agree with that. But 2021, I would say, if I had to sum up the year, I'd say it was the year that the phrase dissident right ceased to be a LARP. So, you know, we find ourselves now in the post-2020, the New World Order, or as we call it, the Flu World Order. We're finding out what it's actually going to be like to be a real political dissident. I mean, remember the days when we called ourselves dissidents because we were banned from Twitter or something like that?
That's a good way to look at it. It hadn't occurred to me. But yes, I mean, obviously, for some people, they've had experiences with Antifa or the police or some institution. But in this case, it really applies to all of us. We all suddenly feel... well, it's oppressed by the authorities to one extent or another, but also even sort of divorced from our families and even former friends, people that the vaccine and well, the COVID and the vaccine and all the other measures have done this to us.
You know, like, for example, for me personally, this COVID has basically made it impossible for me to even travel to my own country. I haven't seen my own family in years now because of this. And, you know, it's something you never really could have imagined just a couple of years ago. Even a year ago when we spoke, I didn't imagine it would have gone this far. But what you see is that we're really starting to see how the post-2020 world is going to shape up, what it's going to be like. And you really see the powers that be, globalism, just becoming so much more aggressive. I mean, where do you begin? There's a lot to say about just the way that we see how people are able to control people. the truths about human nature, which we've learned about how easily it is for them to go along with all of this, how easy it is for them to be riled up into a bloodthirsty rage against those who do not comply. Where do you even begin?
Well, there have been some famous tweets and Facebook posts by people really not just pouring scorn on vaccine refuseniks, but actually wishing them active harm and taking pleasure in the idea of them being harmed, which is, it's happened before, I guess, with other political causes, but I think it's a lot more common now with this issue.
Yeah, the one that was like the jaw-dropping one for me came out of August in Toronto, the Toronto Star. It's my hometown. This is the biggest newspaper in one of the biggest newspapers in all of Canada. And this was printed on the front page. I can read it out. I actually have it right here. Just give me 1 second. I'll pull it up. So they posted on the front page of their paper on August 26th, a giant quotation. It says, I'll read it out here. If an unvaccinated person catches it from someone who is vaccinated, boo-hoo, too bad. I have no empathy left for the willingly unvaccinated. Let them die. I honestly don't care if they die from COVID. Not even a bit. Unvaccinated patients do not deserve beds in the ICU. This isn't some unhinged shitlib on Twitter posting. I mean, it'd be outrageous enough if it was, but this is the front page of the biggest newspaper in Canada posting this. And I mean, again, you know, it's hard to imagine, but you really do see how the populace is being trained to hate those who do not conform. And you know, a lot of times, the other thing we can get into later is just how the zeitgeist of the past 75 years, how a lot of the things that we were taught have just been thrown out the window just immediately, like almost overnight.
And we'll definitely get onto that. But just for now, let's finish this thing about the hatred, because of course it does evoke another, I'm sorry to keep going on about these cliches, but it does evoke the 2 minutes, or is it the 3 minutes hate from 1984? Obviously, Orwell was picking up on something there that I've seen talked about elsewhere, that there is a sadism in human beings, in the general public, and a desire to have a scapegoat, to focus their hatred. And this is something that obviously relates to historical 20th century history. There's this idea that people want a group in society that they can hate. And that in our time, in our age, that has been racists, pedophiles, maybe Muslims, that like terrorists, Islamists. But now it's the unvaccinated.
And what's amazing about it is like you mentioned this on one of your other streams. They always have these like built-in arguments to back up everything they're doing, like the hatred, the discrimination, and the stuff that's being directed towards us. They always have some kind of argument built in, saying, well, this person's being selfish. This person is, they're dragging on the pandemic. They don't care about anyone else. But what you see with them, though, is that none of them are particularly afraid of the virus, really. None of them care about saving lives. And even like that quote that I just wrote out, the cognitive dissonance doesn't even occur to them that if they actually believe that this vaccine works, and that it actually is going to save people's lives, then who are they killing other than themselves? And they already said they don't care if those people die. So it's like, what are they?
That's a good point.
if they believe the vaccine works and they don't care if the unvaccinated die, then what are they so angry about? But what it really is it's just this like searing, unadulterated hatred for the out-group who they've been...
It's like they need, it's like there's something in human nature that wants someone to hate. I mean, this is a cliche. Like all my life I've heard that, this is how a demagogue takes power. You know, it's a weakness in human nature. But I think it is. I think it really is a weakness in human nature. It's like, it's like you give them loads of sweets and they just can't say no. It's just the sugar rush. if you give them permission to hate someone or a particular group, then I think they can't get enough of it. And well, as you say, go on.
Oh no, you can finish.
Well, as you say, it's not like these people are really all that afraid of the virus. I think the only people I can think of who really, like my only experience of people who are being really afraid of the virus were those sort of pathetic soy boys and hysterical women at the start of the pandemic who, you know, you'd see clips of them berating someone for not wearing a mask and sort of almost running away from the person even while they're berating them because they're in a state of fear. Because at that time, to some extent, it was not justified, but you could excuse it back then because they were being terrified by the media into believing that this was a plague and so on. But those are the only people I think were like viscerally, genuinely scared. I suspect that ever since then, it's been largely, it's not real fear. It's more just social consent, the need to fit in. And then everything that goes along with that.
Well, one thing I noticed when I was a young boy in elementary and middle school and stuff like that, you and your group of friends, you'd always have like this person you didn't like. It could be another student or it could be one of your teachers. And you'd gossip about, oh, I hate that person. That, you know, they're so horrible and stuff like that. And you kind of felt closer to each other by like mutually hating some jerk in your school or some dorky kid or some, you know, teacher who was an asshole or something like that. But you felt good when you were doing it. But I mean, this is like, and so I definitely see why it's so appealing to people. But what you see with them is that it's almost as if like they relish the fact that they've been given permission by the system to hate this person. So it's like they've been given their carte blanche to basically dehumanize and treat this one group, this one segment of the population with as much scorn and hate as they possibly can. And I think they're just going to town with it.
Yeah, I think if they could, they'd pelt us with rotten tomatoes. I mean, I think it probably goes back to that. That's probably the same thing in human nature that, you know, going is in the stocks and you can throw anything you want at them. I really think that, I'm not really sure what the limit would be here.
I mean, what I said in one of my videos, which was actually banned from YouTube, it's on Odyssey. But what I said was that like people like this are only like one step away from just outright wishing for you to die. And honestly, I think a lot of like the shit libs on Twitter and even in real life, a lot of them they not so secretly anymore. They actually do hope that people who don't get the vaccine die, not because they actually care about a virus or anything, but because they've been given this one group that they're just able to hate, and they're really just going to town on it. And you mentioned like the person in public who at the very beginning who would like actually act afraid. These days, they'll like just get right up into your face and then lament and then shout at you in public. That's never happened to me because I don't live in the West right now, so it's not really a thing here. But I'll get into that later. But with them, you can see it's like they've been given this pass to just unleash just the most despicable of human tendencies. And there's that one segment of the population, and it's the same one who 3 or 4 years ago were the SJWs, the radical feminists, or the racial activists, or something. The same people who exploited that morality are now exploiting the new morality for the same ends, really. You know, I thought of it like the transgendered issue. Like, why is it that there's so many of these trans activists now? Like, you look at what's it called, BreadTube, and almost every single one of them is transgendered, and they all have the exact same personality. It's a personality type. It's just like they're this complete narcissist, and it's because what this power structure allows is that with like transgenderism, for example, any like deranged, perverted psychopath can identify as that and then use that as a way to torment people, like with the pronouns or something like that. They're at the point now where they can get people fired from their job for not using the correct pronouns. That's just the perfect thing for any psycho to exploit. And COVID has given that kind of person the opportunity to do that just on a daily basis. And not to be the bearer of even more bad news, but I mean, I think they're switching over to climate change within a year or two. And just imagine, if you think that they're bad now, just imagine what it's going to be like when these people are convinced that they're saving the planet by going around and hounding you like this.
Mm. One thing I was going to say, when you said a couple of minutes ago that they, you know, they get right up in your face, and so it occurs to me that they wouldn't actually do that if they really were afraid of the virus.
Oh, yes, exactly.
I mean, that sort of just shows that they're really not that. It's become, the initial hate has been, the initial fear has been replaced by a hate driven by social consensus, like how they're outraged that you dare to not go along with this, that you dare to not conform. Now, I'm not, I'm well past the adolescent stage of delighting in not conforming and delighting in being a rebel and whatever. That's something that I think, I hope most people get over, by the age of 22, let's say. It annoys me. It's the same thing with the other controversial issues. You know, it's not that I want to be controversial. It's not that I want to shock people. It's just that I'm lumbered with these opinions that do shock a lot of people. And it's the same thing with the vaccines. I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm not trying to be different. I'm not trying to be a controversial, and I'm not trying to annoy you. I just really don't believe the virus is much of a threat at all. And I don't believe the masks really work. I don't believe the vaccine really works. Sorry, but the authorities have placed me in this position where I have to, be non-conformist. But the other thing I wanted to point out is that you're talking about this sort of venomous, insane, visceral hatred and loathing that they feel for, at least some of them feel for, anti-vaxxers and the unvaccinated. And note how these three different groups are all conflated: the unvaccinated, the anti-vaxxers, and the anti-COVID passers. That these are three different things, and yet they're all wrapped up together. But anyway, they feel this hatred for us, and it's unbridled sometimes. And the authorities are actively encouraging them to feel that hatred, which is ironic because for the last 25 years, all we've heard from the authorities is how bad hate is. It's such a terrible thing that we have to purge society of. And yet here they are calmly promoting it.
Well, I mean, then there's the issue of the normies. So there's the you know, the shit libs, the vaxtards, the zealots who are going around like with this venom and like enforcing this stuff for the system. But then there's just the normal ones who are kind of just going along, who are just doing it because they're doing what they're told. And in terms of what you mentioned about how we've been taught that like hate is so bad and that like scapegoating people is like the worst thing in the world. You know, it's incredible that not even the last 25 years, but just the, I'm 26 years old, so it's been my entire life, but also like even since like the end of World War II, it's just been like the worst thing in the world is scapegoating minorities, and that demagogues use hate as a means of control and things like this. And then the second that the powers that be decide, well, it's time to kind of change tune here, we're gonna change things up, and now we actually do need to scapegoat these people. Now we actually do need you to not just be the individual anymore. Well, then the masses just go right along with it. And it says a lot that about human nature and the normie. I know you've talked about that a lot this year, that what ends up happening is that the masses just go right along with all of it. I mean,
the malleability of people has been astonishing. You're saying that this year has been an eye opener in various ways. I think this is one of the ways that, I always thought they were malleable. I always thought that they just waited to be told what to think. And sometimes I felt guilty for saying that. You know, sometimes again, because this makes you question yourself as a dissident or whatever, this kind of thing. Like, am I really being fair to the average person here? Or is this just a silly prejudice that I have against them? Is that a form of self-aggrandizement on my own part? That, you know, I think that they are, that they just mindlessly obey fashion and the orthodoxy. But this year has shown that they really do.
And, you know, I think that the other aspect is, though, that we're in a situation right now that I think, but more than any other time in history, that the powers that be are able to facilitate that almost on a dime. Because one thing that you would see in, so I think that the normie has always kind of been the same. So the average person will just go along to get along. I think that's how the saying goes, in pretty much any society. So, you know, the peasants in medieval Europe, they were all Christians. In the Soviet Union, all the workers, you know, supported Stalin and stuff like that. And, you know, 10 years ago or five years ago, every normal person believed in diversity and LGBT and stuff like that. And now they all believe in COVID. But what's incredible, though, is that the population today, their entire perception of reality is being formed for them by the media. They're having this their own consciousness created for them. And so little of, I feel like just less and less of it is actually influenced by experience in the real world versus what they're seeing on their screens. Like, I don't think you can downplay just how effective media has been with all of this stuff. Like, just think back to early 2020, like with the videos coming out of China of people like falling over and collapsing, the stuff coming out of Italy. Now, you know, I'll admit that even for the first couple, my first month or two, I actually thought, okay, maybe there's like some real danger. I should probably, you know, be careful and take this stuff seriously. But, you know, it was really when I really started living life as normal again, you really just realized there was nothing, there really was nothing to worry about. I mean, I haven't been under any COVID restrictions at all for the last year and a half. That's actually just come, the vax pass is just coming in where I am right now. But so I'm going to see what happens. But a lot of people, not so much here, but more so like in these Western countries, they've lived the last 2 years basically vicariously through their screens. So, you know, when they talk about like cases, they talk about, the deaths are going up in Italy. Oh, there's this new variant or something. If this is all someone is hearing for, you know, day in and day out, because this is like literally being projected at them 24/7. Everyone has their smartphone with them at all times. Their reality just becomes whatever is shown to them on their screen and not what's actually out in the real world. I mean, you can say the same thing with the race issue from a few years ago, that, you know, you'd see the commercials where there's the, everyone is like this.
Yeah, but what's interesting here is how fast it all changes. Like right now, it's the Omicron variant. And before that, I think it was Delta, Lambda. But the Omicron one is especially infectious. But it's also milder, apparently. So it doesn't really matter that it's more infectious. So, but they can still use the bogeyman of many cases because of the high infection rate. There'll be many cases, which means there'll be many hospital beds taken up. But that doesn't actually follow if it's much milder. But people are primed to assume that that's what it means. Just one other thing before you go on, I wanted to bring this up, because you mentioned how people's... Because there's another aspect of this with the media, that some ideas have to be injected into the public discourse, into the public consciousness, but they've devised this way of doing it. So it's ideas that would normally be quite shocking to people, but they've devised this very, very clever way of doing it, which is that they introduce the idea and just say that it's some conspiracy theory or some crazy thing. It's never going to happen. That's absurd. But then it percolates through society, and then 6 months or a year later, it's confirmed that it might be necessary. And then 6 months later, yeah, it's going to happen. And this has happened with various things, including the vaccine itself. But just look at this, which I'm going to put up on screen now. Now, I've just checked these headlines. Both of them are genuine. So in April 2020, the idea of microchipping, that was a bizarre theory, but obviously never going to happen. And then in December 2021, so what's that, about 20 months later, it's just being presented in the tech section as something cool that might be happening soon. So, do you know what I mean about this? It's like the public are primed to feel in certain ways about various things.
Well, yeah, this was another point that I had, is that the public doesn't have the mental capacity. I know I might sound demeaning by saying that, but they don't have the mental capacity to remember what they believed 3 months ago. So, yeah. For example, I remember my parents telling me as soon as COVID was starting, that when the vaccine comes, the vaccine's going to get us out of this. So we're gonna be in this until the vaccine comes here. Fast forward a year and a half later, they've not only had their first two vaccines, they've had their booster shot, and they still cancel their Christmas celebrations because of Omicron. So, like, the one thing, the big problem we run into is that we can point out all of these contradictions as they come, and every day you get just a new, absolutely ludicrous contradiction. But the problem that we're running into is that it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how insane it is, because the population does not have the mental capacity to actually process any of this. Like, I think of the word Omicron. Like, when my parents talk about COVID now, they say it's Omicron now, and it's meant to sound like it's out of a Hollywood movie. Like, I think you might have mentioned this on one of your streams too, but how do they have all, like, the hard consonants in all these words? COVID, Omicron, oh, yes. Virus.
Vaccine.
Yeah.
I said that it was like a cheap 90s sci-fi movie or something.
But what you see is that, like, they haven't, like, fully internalized everything that's been said. So they can't follow up on the contradictions. Like, they said, well, Omicron came from South Africa, but South Africa has less than one COVID death per million people in the country. And, it's the unvaccinated who are causing the variants, but this one came from South Africa. And what you find with the normie is that they just hear the word Omicron, and that's just meant to say, well, there you go, you got to get the booster. Omicron booster. And that's basically that's the pathway that the media is basically lighting in their minds. They just put, like, very simple concepts in. And then it's able to get, unfortunately, the vast majority of people to go along with it.
Yeah, very crude mental associations between different concepts. So, as you say, Omicron equals danger. Omicron requires vaccine. Vaccine equals safety. It's primal, actually. It's not something that... And I've said this quite a few times, that it's the thing about the NPC meme is it's just frightening how true it has, how vindicated it's been. Sorry, I'll get rid of that overlay now.
You know, one thing I've also learned from this year is my theory is now that there's nothing that's too insane. There's nothing that's too ridiculous and too impossible to believe that the media cannot push this and get, I'm not saying everyone, but at least a sizable portion of the population to go along with it. Like,
just before you go on, sorry, on that note, I put up a poll in February. If the authorities, this is on Telegram, if the authorities proclaimed that you can reduce your chances of catching COVID by walking sideways while outside, what percentage of the public would do it?
Well, here's the thing. 50% of the public would do it, and they would blame the other 50% who are not walking sideways for the fact that it didn't work. But another hilarious example, and I can't believe this, but I had a joke that I said that in Canada, if the Canadian Broadcasting Company, CBC, if they release an article saying that Indigenous knowledge finds that 1 + 1 actually equals 3, not only would half the population believe it, but they'd call the other half who don't believe it white supremacists. And I said this as a joke, but then Ontario, the province I'm from, they actually have in their curriculum now that that math is racist, and analyzing math from different cultural perspectives, knowing that too much focus on finding the right answer, or that there only is one answer, is actually Eurocentric.
And I mean, this is just insane. This is like one of these things that just tells you you are living in the end of a civilization, when even something as fundamental and basic as mathematics is becomes ideological. It's thrown into doubt. It's up for grabs. We don't really know whether 1 + 1 = 2. I mean, again, it's the bloody Orwell cliche.
And you know, obviously this is insane, but the problem, like I mentioned, is it just doesn't seem to matter at all. It just keeps on going along. Like the Ontario government, when they posted this on their website, rightfully so, it was mocked, and they actually just, they didn't change the curriculum. They just took down the section on their website, because obviously it was ludicrous. Yeah. And even like, and then one of the guys from politician from a left-wing party criticized them criticized them for giving in to right-wing outrage. And it's just like, you don't, what do you even say about it? Because what we've noticed is that like there's just no end to it. It doesn't matter how insane it goes. It really doesn't matter.
No. And another aspect of this that's interesting is that you've got that the encouragement of this mental this incoherence about, well, we don't know whether 1 + 1 = 2. That's that, you know, yeah, sure, we used to believe that, but new evidence suggests that actually it's could be a lot more complicated than that. And of course, the ancients, those who lived in this land before us, they had that great wisdom, and we should really take that seriously. We might learn something from it. So everything is up for grabs with mathematics for the general public, but the Omicron variant is something to, it's definitely, we know it's something to be scared about, and everyone should be scared about it. So you've got, at the same time, this, on the one hand, everything's an unknown. Everything's up for, we don't know. And at the same time, be dead certain about this thing. Even though the reasoning for this thing is flimsy as hell.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing that you've noticed is that I've yet to see one country, institution, anything that's actually been able to stand up to this new system of control. Because, you know, I feel like even us in the dissident right, I don't think that we fully understand exactly what's going on just yet, that, you know, myself included. I don't think we've fully come to grips with it, because I think you've talked about this a lot too, how this kind of new power structure has just been able to cut through the national governments, every single institution, like a knife through hot butter. And we've yet to see one institution that, you know, at least one that's accepted by mainstream society that's willing to stand up to any of this stuff. You can think about the medical establishment now, the scientific community, obviously, I mean, the universities and the media, that's, you know, we've known about that for a long time. The church, the national governments, it almost seems everything is just
everything down to some rural museum that, you know, supports BLM.
Yeah. They had one in British Columbia that they destroyed their entire museum. Like they completely gutted it for the purposes of decolonization. I don't even think they had a plan for what they were going to replace it with. Probably, you know, some indigenous or BLM crap. But their point was, like, they didn't have an idea of what they were going to do. They just wanted to destroy that museum.
Yeah, that didn't matter. That it might be empty rooms afterwards. They're not going to care. They just want to get rid of what's there. I mean, you know, if you'd asked me 3 years ago, how far off do you think we are from this situation that you and I are describing right now? I would probably have said like 20, 30 years before we get to a stage where every single institution, where there would be no resistance to global homo tyranny. I'd probably have thought like at the soonest, like 10 years. But probably 20 years and possibly 30 years. But instead, no, we were already there. I hadn't realized it.
And like I think the worst example is that the churches have even been brought under this, you know, satanic cloud, really. So the Vatican now has the vaccine passport. And to me, that was something that I just thought was, I'm not a Catholic, I'm Protestant, but I mean, I certainly have no faith in the institution of the church, whether it's the Catholic, Protestant, or hell, even the Orthodox one are giving into this. But just like I just thought that just struck me so hard, the fact that the Catholic Church now has the vaccine passport. Because what that is, is that it's the ultimate conquest of the spiritual by the political. So, you know, these institutions have just been rotted from the inside out, and they're now completely at the whims of political power. You know, you just see this political juggernaut just steamrolling everything in sight. Like, there has been certain roadblocks that it's run into. There's been some countries that, you know, the vaccine has not been widely accepted. People just aren't really getting it. But then I hate to say this, but you know, a lot of the holdouts in Eastern Europe and a couple other places, a lot of states and some states in America, it seems like they're getting a lot of them underneath their grips. So, you know, what I'm saying is that we've yet to see, you know, a front on which this new agenda has been halted. Some people are a bit optimistic that they're going to be running into problems. I don't know quite yet. I will say that I do think the booster campaign is going to succeed. I mean, I'm looking at the countries that have started the uptake, and it does look like they're well on their way to boostering almost everyone who got the first two. I mean, the UK, they've already, almost half the population already has the booster. So, you know, I hope that it comes. I hope it comes eventually where they actually are pushed back on one front, but we haven't seen that yet.
I mean, I think this is why they've put so much effort into scaremongering about Omicron, because otherwise many people wouldn't get the booster. And I think they needed people to get the booster. I mean, Omicron, they needed people to get the booster, come what may. So I think Omicron has been used. This is the reason why you've got to get. It was optional before, and it's still optional. But really, you'd be crazy not to get it, because now there's Omicron to be scared of.
Yeah, and even then, there's just all the other coercion that they've pulled on us, and pretty much all of that has worked. So, you know, it started by trying to scare you into getting it. Then they gave you some incentives to get it. Then it was social pressure. And now it's actually like financial pressure. And some countries, you know, who knows what's next?
I mean, Australia and New Zealand, the famous quote from the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, it's going to be two different, first class and second class citizens, you know. And then in Australia, there was a guy, I think it was a head of one of the states, and he was saying, if you're unvaccinated, you're not going to have much of a life. Like, you won't be able to socialize, you won't be able to work. I mean, this is a massive, massive thing.
Like, for example, I'm basically not able to travel to Canada anymore. First of all, I don't know if I'd even be allowed in. I think if I provided like a negative test or something, I'd be allowed in. But then what would happen to me when I got in? Would I be detained? Most likely. They have this, they didn't have a camp yet, but they had a COVID hotel that you have to pay for out of pocket. And you know, I don't know how, I think they can just keep you there indefinitely. I've heard of people who have, been forced to stay there longer than they were supposed to be. It hasn't gone quite Australia yet, but it seems to be going along that route. I don't know if all the provinces have the vax pass yet, but I think all of them do. If someone can correct me on that, I'm not sure if all of them do, but I know Ontario, Quebec, Manitoba, British Columbia, New Brunswick. In New Brunswick, they had legislation which said that, now it wasn't mandatory for all of them to do this, but the legislation allowed grocery stores to ban unvaccinated people from entering the grocery store. It's like you can't even buy food anymore.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. It's just incredible.
But there's more, though. You're not allowed to go on a train now if you don't have the vaccine. You're not allowed to fly. So if I, like, for example, if I went back in, it would be impossible for me to leave the country. You're not allowed to leave the country if you're not vaccinated. And I don't even know, or if you're not a citizen of the country, will they still keep you there? And, you know, it's a really good way to ensure that there's no political opposition to this. They banned unvaccinated people from entering the House of Commons. If you're an MP and you're not vaccinated, you're not allowed to go and vote against
and,
it.
You know, that's such a clever move on their part because, well, I mean, you can see what the effect of it will inevitably be. But they can actually say that this is still democratic. It's not that I particularly love democracy, but that is supposed to be what we live under. And they can say, well, it's still democratic. It's completely voluntary for these people to remain unvaccinated and choose not to be able to take part in the voting process.
Yeah, but I mean, you're getting close to the part. It's like, when does something become mandatory? Like, if you, if I literally like put a gun to your head and say, "Do it, or else I'll shoot you." If I don't do that, then it's not mandatory. So, like, I mean,
yes, of course,
they're really pushing that boundary
very much. And I don't know. It seems that, you know, and another thing that's really amazed me is that up until now, if some injustice happened, even with the government or the legal, the judiciary, the last resort or the last recourse for people was the human rights organizations, you know, civil liberties organizations and whatever. But they're all on board. Nothing. I mean, and another thing that surprised me is the apparent inability of people to organize and create their own, because clearly these organizations are not fit for purpose in this age, and certainly on this issue they're definitely not going to do what we need them to do. So the new organizations have to be created that are explicit, that they're not going to cuck on this issue, they're not going to bend, this is the issue that they exist for. There clearly needs to, these organizations need to be born now. A year and a half ago, and yet it hasn't happened. And in fact, no one knows. Like, there isn't even a central resource in each country, like a website or a Telegram group or a WhatsApp group or something, where the people share and pull information. This lack of organization again amazes me. My only conclusion can be that the people who are good at organization go into professional organizing, and all of those companies would have nothing to do with this. Therefore, what's left is the people who aren't very good at organizing, so they don't know how to pull people together all in one place that's easy to find, and it's efficient and it's well run, and the information's easily findable and indexed and all that. You'd think that these skills weren't that rare, though. You know, where's the get up and go here? We should be able to do this. Well, I don't understand.
You mean like as in the dissident right, us?
Not even the dissident right, just more generally. I mean, everyone who's anti-vax pass. Why isn't there an Australian website or whatever, Telegram group, for Australian anti-vaxxers, where they share all of this information and find out the legal routes that could possibly be explored, lawyers who are willing to do it, wealthy people who are willing to fund a legal case, a doctor who's willing to testify, a scientist who's willing to testify. We should be able to organize this stuff. I mean, I guess for the dissident right, it's difficult because people who aren't in agreement with us on certain issues don't want to associate with us. I mean, I contacted quite a lot of people, maybe about 20 people who to appear on Millennial. None of them replied. So that's a shame. But I'm not I mentioned that partly to show you that Millennial could have been quite different this year if it had gone to plan, but also to illustrate the point that we aren't the ones who can possibly organize what I'm talking about. But the general and like the non-nationalists, whatever, anti-vaxxers, they are the ones who should be organizing this kind of stuff. And what surprises me is how there just apparently isn't the get up and go to do that.
You know, I think that one of the problems is that the people who are implementing this agenda right now, before they gave it the green light, they made sure that they had all of their hands on certain pressure points. So media, pharmaceutical companies, they just had their hands on all of the key cogs that are able to allow them to pull this off. So, you know, I think with a lot of people, they've made it that you'd incur a very severe personal cost to actually go against any of this stuff. And I think that might be why a lot of more people who are affluent and have the money and the know-how haven't actually been doing much. But I will say that, and this is actually the theme of my next video, we can't rely on using liberal arguments against this stuff, because the problem you have, though, is anyone who would actually be enforcing any of these, like I made a video in December 2019, 3 months before COVID happened, about human rights and why they don't really even exist. They're just whatever those in power say they are at any given moment. And the point I made was that it'll just be interpreted to whatever is able to harm us and benefit the elites. So, you know, back then it would have been like, and still today, actually, some migrant that shows up in Europe or Canada or some Western country, this person has human rights. It's a human rights violation to deport them. And, you know, if they commit a crime, well, then they have their, you know, lawyered up to the eyeballs, and this is all their human rights. But then, you know, when it's one of our guys being harassed by Antifa or activists or even law enforcement, well, and the human rights are nowhere to be found. And the problem we're running into now is that with COVID, all the people who would be enforcing these so-called human rights, they're the ones who are trying to make us get the vax pass. Like, these human rights are not going to save you. I can actually tell you a funny personal story. I was speaking to this Brazilian woman who worked in healthcare. I can't remember exactly what she did. She was some medical worker or something like that. And she said that, in 2013, I went to Helsinki for the revisions of the Helsinki agreement or Helsinki declaration, which is about like medical consent and why you need to have informed consent and stuff. And, you know, this big spiel. And I said, well, doesn't the COVID vaccine campaign violate this principle? And then she said, well, we've decided that if it's harming other people, then you don't really have a choice. And I didn't say that. I didn't want to be rude, but I just thought, what is the point of your entire Helsinki declaration? It's worthless. It means nothing. And that's what these human rights are. They were only ever meant to benefit those in power. And when they're no longer beneficial to them, they're gone. They don't exist anymore. And you can't rely on that. So, you know, a lot of people I think that most people in our sphere are not naive enough to actually think that, you know, we're going to use the Nuremberg, what's it called? The Nuremberg Convention or something?
The declaration. Nuremberg Code.
Code. Oh. Yeah. Declarate. I don't know. Whatever. The Nuremberg Declaration or whatever it's called. I think most of us are not that naive, but all the people going around talking about how this violates human rights and how it's segregation and, oh, this is what the Nazis did and stuff like this, they're going to be in for a rude awakening, because it's almost like they thought they had this like safety net with them their entire life, and now they fall they've fallen and that safety net's not there. And, you know, that's why I think that a lot of people, like maybe the more normie, maybe not the dissident right ones, but the more mainstream anti-vax crowd, I think they're going to be in for a rude awakening.
I think they're already in a state of shock and bafflement for precisely this reason, because they thought, I mean, you and I, as you said, you made that video before this all started. You and I had an inkling that a lot of what the establishment purports to believe is hot air. They don't really believe it. Still, you and I have, I think, still it's been a bit of a rude awakening for us. But at least we had that preparation. The sort of liberal, hippie, anti-vaxxer is someone who has been completely taken aback. I mean, they don't understand that. You know, I think even now they still think that, well, we've just got to appeal to these principles that I've lived by and believed in all my life. I think they can't really believe that authority is actually serious, because they've never had to really take it seriously before. It's always been on their side anyway on most issues, so it didn't matter. But yeah, now that authority is here and making itself known, they can't quite believe it.
Well, yeah, it's like the boy that got into the white van that had free candy written on the side to find out that there's no candy in the van, but a very scary looking man in there.
Yeah, exactly. It's a rude awakening for them, a scary new experience. And there's part of me that has sort of empathy and sympathy for them, because they genuinely thought they lived in a just world and a non-corrupt world. There was a separation between government and big business, when clearly, there absolutely isn't. You wanted to focus on things that have, like, the ways in which the last year, especially this year, has been an eye-opener. Was there anything else you'd like to say about that?
Well, I can give some insight of, like, where I am right now. So the COVID stuff in Eastern Europe. What has happened is there was an initial lockdown in early 2020, and I actually abide by it. I abided by it for about a couple of weeks, maybe 6 or 7 weeks. Maybe a bit longer. I'm embarrassed now, but back then, I thought I would actually take it seriously. But another thing though, I was wondering was, because what was going through my head back then was that, if countries like Iran, China, Russia, where I am right now, and Hungary, if they're all going along with it, then it must actually be, it must actually be real. But as we've seen, actually, they're able to cut through even those borders too,
which is another amazing aspect.
The only two countries that didn't go along with it initially were Belarus and Sweden.
Yeah,
that's an interesting case in itself. But what basically happened? So there was an initial lockdown, and then that ended around June or so, and by July everything was back to normal. It was just life as normal, and it more or less was like that until July of 2021. So shame on me for this, but for a long time, like many months, COVID was really not on my mind. The only thing that I was actually thinking about was what's it doing in Canada, and then when the vaccine started to come, and that's when I started to actually think, okay, this might actually be a pretty big problem. Not that I didn't take it seriously before that, but that's when you really saw that we were in pretty hot water. But then what happened was, it seems like it just came back with a vengeance in Russia. So they tried to get people to take the vaccine initially, but nobody was really interested in it. They pretty much nobody took it, other than a very small percentage of the population. And then certain businesses started requiring their employees to get it. And then eventually they actually tried to get the vaccine passport in Moscow in July, but then it actually failed and was canceled after 3 weeks. And some people said that, that they did that because there was an election coming up. Not that the elections there even matter, or in the West, the elections don't matter in the West either. But nonetheless, they started bringing that back in September. And what I've noticed, which is interesting, is that it seems like the plan. So I'm guessing that all these countries are following some kind of COVID roadmap that's been set out for them by the World Health Organization, which has gotten its funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And, you know, he's connected to all these other people like Pfizer, World Economic Forum and such. So like there's this like COVID roadmap that every country has been given. And what I find is that like countries like Canada, Australia, Austria, Germany, these countries are like following the COVID roadmap to a T. So there's the masks, there's the social distancing, they have the tape on the ground, the plexiglass and all such. They have the periodic lockdowns, but it hasn't really worked out in every country. For example, in Russia, basically they still have the signs on the wall telling you to wear a mask or to like stand a meter and a half apart, but that's like not even enforced anymore because it like just nobody is really afraid of it. A couple old people might wear the mask on the street. The only time that you actually have to wear it is just to get onto the metro and then you can take it off 1 second later. But what's interesting is that they've basically just said, okay, forget about the masks, forget about the lockdowns, forget about the social distancing. We're just going to go straight for the vax pass. And they've basically tried to get these QR codes into all these different regions of the country. So it's an interesting case study because it seems like they've been given the same COVID roadmap, but it's not going nearly as smoothly. So a lot of the things they've just said, okay, we're going to forget about that. We're going to just go straight for the vax pass, which does seem to be the ultimate goal. And it remains to be seen if that'll work. People actually are taking the vaccine now that they're actually feeling the coercion, now that some industries have required their employees, some companies have done that. And then they're getting the QR systems and they're trying to implement that now. And some regions already have it. There's one city called Kazan, which you need a QR code to get on the public transit. The vaccine campaign it got off to a rocky start, but unfortunately it's actually seems like it's gaining steam. So again, you know, we have yet to see a country that's actually been able to successfully where this agenda has floundered. But it is interesting that it's not nearly as successful as in other countries. And hopefully that can be like a ray of hope for some people that maybe there'll be places where they just aren't able to enforce this agenda.
Well, that's what people are hoping about Austria and Germany, especially Austria, because they're apparently going to implement do you know about this?
Yeah, a fine. Yeah. Like you have to pay thousands of euros every month.
It's massive amounts of money. In fact, one thing I read, I don't know if this is true or not, but I read that you could actually get fined multiple times in a single day. Let's just leave that aside because it might well be nonsense. It's thousands. And if you don't pay the fines, then it gradually increases. And if you still don't pay it, at some point they just put you in prison. This could lead to untold numbers of people being imprisoned for not being vaccinated. It's interesting, isn't it? Because they've got this idea that we're not forcing you. We're just going to put you in jail if you don't do it.
Yeah, it's like, like I said earlier, oh, we're not going to kill you if you don't do it. We're just going to throw you in jail and take away all of your money. It's
mandatory. Yeah, it's still your choice whether to become a criminal or not by not taking the vaccine.
It's like saying, well, we're not banning murder. I mean, you can do it if you want. We're just going to throw you in jail.
We're not authoritarians. But yeah, it's a very, again, it's just so much has happened, which I think has amazed me. I think it's amazed most of us, really. I think there are maybe some who are so grizzled that in this movement that it doesn't surprise them. But to me, when you think about this globalist juggernaut just fucking leveling any obstacles in its path, like you were saying there about Russia, Hungary, Sweden even, you know, because Sweden didn't do the lockdowns and whatever.
They still got them.
They still got the vaccine and the COVID pass they're going for as well, I believe. Because people were hoping for about Sweden, including me, because it would be nice just to have, in the same way that Japan is like the ethno state that's the model, that's an inspiration. If it exists, then the idea is possible. In the same way, if Sweden exists and it's not, it's staying sane, you know, it's not gone all 2020, or if it's like it was in 2019, then that means the rest of us could do that. You know, that model exists as an inspiration. So, but now it's gone. And I hate saying this stuff. I'm sorry. I know it's very miserable. I apologize.
The other thing I noticed is that, like, so where I am in St. Petersburg, like, it's just been life as normal. It's just like the vax pass is just coming in right now. So, you know, I mean, no, there's no one like insane leftists who are like shout at you for not wearing a mask on the street. But it just feels like the COVID stuff is just so like imperial, almost like a Christian mission in South America or Africa several centuries ago. It's like it's been created somewhere else and then just implanted there by some imperial power, almost. Like, for like, something that's weird is that, like, they've adopted COVID terminology from English into their language. So now they have like the word lockdown in Russian, not the translation of the word lockdown, literally just lockdown. Now people start to say that. It's almost like it's just been like,
it's funny. You know, I can give you a funnier one than that from Germany. They actually have imported the word shitstorm. But they haven't even changed it to like a Scheißestürmer or what, Scheißesturm. They just say shitstorm. So, and it's not regarded as a swear word either, because it's a foreign language. So you'll see it in a headline and like a newspaper and stuff. It's very funny.
Oh yeah, that happens. That happens everywhere. So, you know, like the word cringe now is it that other languages say that. So, but no, I just thought it was interesting that the COVID terminology is now like entering other languages, like the COVID terminology created by, you know, who knows, Bill Gates or whatever, World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. But basically, the COVID terminology is now like entering other languages. It just seems like it's so imperial, you know? Which really just hammers home how unnatural it is that, like, this isn't something that these countries they decided upon what was the best course of action. This was decided for them, and then they've just been applied all this pressure to implement the same agenda, which really speaks to the global nature of it. And I do think that my theory is that it is the gateway to the climate agenda. And I think that that's kind of going to be the big one that's going to serve in perpetuity. I think that I made a recent video about this, that, you know, COVID is like, for many people, it's their great struggle. The great struggle against COVID is the first time that many people who have lived their entire lives as consumers.
Absolutely. And this is something that, do you articulate it?
I don't want to like talk. I don't want to always talk crap about my parents because they really are good people, and I love them a whole bunch. And you know,
lots of good people have got taken in by this. I mean, everyone's in that position that when you have to criticize people whom you dearly love, and it's horrible.
But it just seems like for them, it's something that they just got so invested in that, like, the fight against COVID. It's like, you know, something finally happened in their life. They finally found like their big struggle, because, like, you know, they've had a good life, a very prosperous one, but, you know, ultimately it was one that was like they never had their great struggle. They're boomers. They were born in the 50s after World War II. There was never like any really big wars in their time or anything. Like, they were never like called up by their country to do their duty. And COVID has served for a lot of people as like a great struggle, which is why I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that they love COVID. Like, for them, it's given them the feeling of civic virtue for the first time in their entire lives, that they actually have this one cause that they can fight for. And
absolutely. And this is a fascinating aspect of it. I mean, I've said this in my last few Gram episodes. I've been talking about this, and it's come up in Millennial quite a few times, that I'm sorry to interrupt you, by the way. I thought that you were about to pause. So sorry.
No, go ahead.
But that it's a new, I sort of articulated it as a new form of collectivism, but it's a because it's your duty towards the collective. But it's an artificial collective. It's like a global collective. But it's a form of collectivism because the individual has ceased to be that important. I'm not going to say that everyone now regards himself as an ant in a hive. I don't think it's that extreme. But I think that people value their individual liberty and even the idea of their individual liberty far less than they did 5 years ago. Well, 2 years ago. Whereas all my life, that was the thing. You know, in the 90s, the 2000s, you were an individual. You were a consumer. You were not tied to tradition or any people or any religion. It's all about you, your liberty, your choices, your options, your lifestyle. You know, you have your way at BK. And that was it. And anything which impinged on your liberty was regarded as, you know, anathema. And suddenly now this has just come out of nowhere and completely changed all that. Now, the prototype that I would say is the smoking bans that came in the second half of the 2000s, because it was a similar rationale. Your duty towards everyone else means that you can't do this thing which endangers their health. And your liberty ends where my safety begins. But this is much, much more extreme than that, because it's a sort of religion.
And one thing is that we've always spoken about World War II, our sphere. We kind of recognize that World War II has been it was the foundational myth of the West for about 75 years. I'd argue from 1945 to 2020, World War II was the foundational myth of what you were talking about, the world of individualism and nihilism and
consumerism,
egalitarianism, consumerism, and like, because the ultimate like antithesis to that was the Nazis. So they were like the ultimate evil that was the opposite of the egalitarian individualist consumer. And that anything that would be like a restriction on that kind of lifestyle was, you know, Nazism or racism or fascism or whatever. I feel like what COVID is going to be, because we know now that Agenda 21 was formulated back in the 1990s. Now, I haven't read too much into that, but I think this is something that I myself will admit I missed the boat on that. But what was his name? Mark Malone, who you had on your channel. He did a great work on that. I thought the brilliant line he had, and Morgoth said the same thing, that we're not going to have global government, we're going to have global governance. But I think though that COVID is going to act as the foundational myth for the climate change era. You know, our beloved Prime Minister in Canada, Justin Trudeau, is kind of the globalist that always spills the beans. So what happens is there'll be a conspiracy theory. They'll say, oh, the Great Reset, that's a conspiracy theory. Then Justin Trudeau will be the one who comes out and says, we're going to have a Great Reset in that insufferable voice of his. And they'll say, oh, Build Back Better, that's a conspiracy theory. Then Justin Trudeau will be the one to come out and say, we need to build back better.
But I've noticed he doesn't say better. He goes, it's better. Is that Canadian? Is that the Canadian way to say it?
He's from Quebec, though, so I don't know.
It's something I know really exactly. Noticed, because I expect North Americans to do, I think it's the hard T, but anyway, it doesn't matter. It's just it's very
quick. I say better, as in like, I pronounce the B's as D's. Yeah. I say better, but anyway, one thing he said was that, well, we're gonna use the lessons we learned in this pandemic to tackle climate change and to tackle indigenous issues and
equality.
What that basically tells you is that, that was my very thing. Is like, if they're using the lessons that they learned from this pandemic, if they're gonna be applying that, then this climate agenda is gonna be it's going to make COVID look like a walk in the park, because just imagine what they're going to do when this climate change stuff comes in. That is if it works. Now, I will, I know I've been really negative this stream, but I will say that ultimately I do think that their system won't work. I think they'll be able to implement it, I think it'll last for a few years. And I think in certain places it'll be really bad, like in Germany and Switzerland and probably Canada, Australia, where things actually work. I mean, you can say what you want about countries, like all these countries, you know, they're horrible, run by these horrible shitlibs, but at least they're actually run properly and they're effective. So in this day and age, that's the worst thing to have, is to have a government that's actually competent, because they're competent in implementing this totalitarian nightmare. But I do ultimately think that the system is going to fail. But I think that what they have lined up is that climate change is basically going to be the struggle in perpetuity, and COVID's going to kind of lay the groundwork for it. It's going to be the new, like, foundational myth. So, and I think what they're going to do is they're going to, like, blow it out of proportion in the future. They're just going to say that there was way more deaths than there actually was. There was dead bodies lying in the streets, and that, you know, we came together as a global community, because you see, this virus knew no borders. And this shows that in a globalized world, we need global solutions. And they'll also say that, well, the deaths are the results of conspiracy theorists and science deniers. And this will be used as the justification to basically control all information, to monitor every aspect of people's lives. Like, you see them laying the groundwork with COVID. It transitions perfectly into the climate agenda, because they've basically implemented this new morality, which it's almost like post-human. That it's, whereas World War II was, after World War II, it was, you know, consumerism and individualism. This one is like dehumanization, isolation, mass obedience, mass surveillance. And I think it just segues great into what they have in the pipeline.
Yeah. I think that's an ominous thought. But about this new collectivism, or whatever you might say, civic duty, if you want to call it that, I think in a way you could say that people were rescued from individualism by this. I think it was something that they clearly needed. They clearly needed something to serve, something to work to be part of. So, and we've known this, that historically people have, they like to belong to a nation, they like to belong to a religion, they like to belong to a local community, a local town, they like to do their bit, they like to feel that they are helping, because that makes them feel that they are virtuous, and it makes them feel that they are valued by their fellows, their peers, so they're safe. And I think that throughout the era of, you know, rank consumer individualism, people were missing all of that. It's fascinating to me, you know, how what has been, because, you know, I it made sense to me that, yeah, people are missing old, the things that they used to have. This is why there's this, you know, we constantly watch period dramas on TV, that people are constantly hankering after, you know, things like The Little House on the Prairie or The Waltons in America, or, you know, Lark Rise to Candleford in Britain. These things where people belonged and people served the greater good. So in that context, you know, with that in mind, it really isn't surprising that when an opportunity came along to live in an equivalent of that, or live with an equivalent of that social imperative, they leapt at it. They were delighted. They were delighted to be freed from the need to be a complete, you know, deracinated individual.
Yeah, this is actually what my recent video was about. I made my video about a American psychologist and philosopher named William James, who gave a speech in 1906 about what he called the moral equivalent of war. So he was a pacifist who wanted to find some moral equivalent to war, which would sophonsify all of war's, all of the benefits that people derive from war. Because he was in the early 20th century, militarism was on the rise in the West, and eventually it would culminate in World War I. But he recognized the importance of the martial virtues, that every man wants to belong to a conquering nation. His first duty to his nation is military service. War is the romance of history. There's this hardy virtue to the warrior. It's an archetype we want in society, all of which is true. But from his perspective, he thought, well, this is going to cause a war, so we need to find something that's going to replace this. And what he advocated for was this great, like, struggle against nature. So, like, getting men to go out and build railroads and skyscrapers and embark on these huge public works projects. This was the early 20th century. He thought of that as kind of the moral equivalent to war. And the argument I used is that this has kind of been, for many people, the moral equivalent of war. It's been their great struggle, which has gotten them that they've actually been able to feel that sense of civic virtue.
I mean, not to be crass, but I can understand what he was going for there, but it kind of sounds like, I don't know, like sex with a condom kind of thing. It's not quite the real thing. You know, I get the idea, but it's never going to be quite as satisfying as an actual war, because in an actual war, you've got the enemy and you've got the threat, the potential for death and defeat by an enemy who hates you and hates everything you stand for and all this. And you've got also the thrill of of fighting, the thrill of battle, the danger, the possibility that you could die. It's not like that when you're doing a public works project. That's a very, and I understand that. I'm not saying that we should all be at war all the time. I'm just saying I can understand why people would never find that quite as satisfying or involving. It's always going to feel like a sort of emasculated version of being an actual soldier.
Yes. I would say that the proposition is not very practical.
Yeah. But. And similarly, you've got the equivalent today with COVID, the warrior who's fighting for this cause is some goddamn soy boy who's frantic because someone's not got his mask on. It's pathetic. I mean, it's like a really low, degraded form of masculinity.
Yeah, and what I said in the video is that the moral equivalence of war that they're bringing in now, like the COVID stuff, the climate change stuff in the near future, it serves as a great struggle for people, but what it doesn't do is what James talks about in his essay is that, speech, which was turned into an essay, but what he talks about is that war fosters the warrior spirit, these hardy masculine virtues. And the problem is with like the COVID stuff and the climate change stuff, it's anything but masculine. It instead of fostering the martial virtues, it fosters weakness really. And it sophonicizes that need for a struggle, but ultimately it does make the population weaker. But I also wanted to look at it from our perspective, because I think that, to get away from all the negativity, I think that, you know, we are also presented with an opportunity where we can actually take a stand on something for once and actually show real conviction. And we're going to have a lot of opportunities depending on, because I think we're going to essentially be locked out of the system. And I think we're going to need to, find ways around the system. I hope that the protest anti-vax pass, I hope that movement succeeds. I really hope it does, but I'm not too optimistic about that succeeding. I do think that ultimately they will be able to implement what they want for at least a certain time period. But
go on.
Yeah. But I think though that we actually have a chance now to actually show that we have conviction, and, you know, by getting out of the system, you know, if we're not reliant on all of these overabundances of modernity anymore, we can just grow as people. You know, we might not be warriors. There might not be like this massive civil war, which I think there'll be unrest and stuff, but I don't think there's going to be a full scale war or anything. But, you know, we can actually regain a lot of these virtues by building things of our own outside of the system, you know, our own businesses, working together, forming our own communities, and we actually will feel a sense of civic duty to one another. So I think we actually have an opportunity.
I hope so. I hope you're right. And I think you are. But I don't want to put you on the spot here, but why do you think that their system won't last very long?
Because when you look at it, I'm just looking at it from the perspective that I have right now. Like, it's not going as smoothly as they would have hoped. In countries like in Western Europe, it's working like a charm. but it kind of relies on the entire world going along with it at the same time, because then what you'd end up with is just like a couple of countries here and there that are just these absolute basket cases while the rest of the world just kind of goes on with life as normal. And then also there's the other issue that it requires control over absolutely every aspect of your life. I mean, they're going to have this digital ID, which basically you need to cross any kind of threshold in the entire country. It's like they've laid out this game plan, but all of this relies on every single step on the game plan going according to plan. And I don't think that's really going to happen. I think that they're going to run into trouble that when really the system just doesn't work. And ultimately, it's just so like anti-human, really. That's why I think it ultimately will fail, is that it's just so contrary to human nature.
Yeah, that's what I think as well. I think you might get to a point where everyone is still pious and saying the right things, and everyone is pretending to still be going along with it, but everyone is lying, and everyone is getting stuff in the black market, and everyone is cutting every corner they can, and it's just a general like given that this is life now. It's a huge pretense where we all pretend to still believe, but really it was something that people believed 10 years ago, and everyone went crazy and they were fanatical, and we still have to pretend to go along with it and be fanatical, but everyone knows that nobody is really anymore. I can imagine that situation emerging.
Yeah, it's like at the end of the Eastern Bloc, at the end of the Iron Curtain. We've heard these stories that, you know, everybody knew that it was a lie, but they were still going along with it because, it was the thing to do. But then eventually the lies and the deceit and the propaganda eventually just wore off, and it turned out that nobody really believed it anymore. Now, I mean, I don't know how long that's going to take, but I do think that that something similar will probably happen with this system, that it's going to just not really go as smoothly. However, I will say that I don't want to give people too much false hope, because it has the potential to do a lot of damage. I mean, you know, communism did fall apart eventually, but I mean, how many people did it take out in its path? Quite a few. I think the question is I don't think the system will work, but I do think that it does have the potential to be extremely dangerous. And I think, you do have to like find a way to actually get out of the system so that you're not the one who is, who's going to be taken down. You're not going to be the one who, I don't know, is going to be put in the concentration camp and forcibly injected with God knows what until your heart just like stops beating because you have a blood clot.
Yeah, gosh, that's awful, isn't it? Imagine, because I can imagine them doing that and saying every step of the way that this is the right thing to do. We're being humane here. We're forcing upon him something that he doesn't want, but which is good for him, even if it does give him a heart attack and kill him. That's just an unfortunate anomaly. You know, I can imagine people actually being that robotic about it. We've just got to do this. We've got to protect him from COVID, even if protecting him from COVID kills him. The variant this year is vicious. You know, I mean, it's surreal, but I think it's basically what's already going on now. It's just not being literally forced on people, but they are being encouraged to do something that's statistically. I mean, I don't want to give false medical disinfo here, but it seems that the heart attack, I mean, all of these sportsmen, like every single week there's at least one professional sportsman dropping dead. When this is unheard of. I mean, it was a once in a blue moon thing before the vaccine. So you've got all these people taking a vaccine for a virus that really almost certainly wouldn't kill them. But the vaccine has, what I'm saying sounds so crazy that the vaccine statistically has a higher chance of killing you than the virus that it supposedly protects you against. But I don't see loads of sportsmen dying from COVID. I do see loads of sportsmen dying from the vaccine. So I don't know how else I can imagine like certain organizations repeat like quoting me what I'm saying right now as irrational scaremongering. But I don't know how else you can interpret that. I mean, I don't think it's irrational or scaremongering. I mean, how else can you interpret those numbers?
Well, not only that, but like how just relentless they are to just get as much of this stuff in your body as possible, as fast as possible. I think it was a day or two ago that in Australia, they're moving the boosters from every 5 months down to, they're moving it from every 6 months down to every 5 months. And then from, June or so onwards, I just pulled it up right now. So they're moving the interval for the boosters from 5 months down to 4 months in January. Then from January 31st onwards, it's down to 3 months. And not only that, but all these countries have purchased more than enough vaccines to vaccinate every single person in the country multiple times over the next couple of years. Like they're saying that you're going to need the vaccine once every 3 months in Australia for this Omicron, whatever the moronic variant, which is known to not be nearly as deadly. The more relentless they get with this thing, the more because my working hypothesis for most of the year was that this was the gateway to the vaccine passport, which is the gateway to the digital ID. But the more relentless they get at injecting as much of the stuff in you as possible, as fast as possible, I'm starting to think that there's something seriously wrong with it. And you just see these videos of the sportsmen. But then, you know, getting back to what we were saying earlier, that's not stopping the normies from getting the vaccines. Like there was this video, which was incredible, but there was a lineup for COVID vaccines at a shopping mall. People were lining up and getting their vaccines. And then somebody was writhing on the ground the 1 second after getting it. And the people still lined up and they still got the vaccine. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned that in one of the millennial streams this year that I saw this footage or a photo of people queuing up outside a vaccine center. And it's just like lambs to the slaughter. I mean, it's like sheep, you know, and it was on a rainy day as well. And I was thinking, fucking hell, you know, that looks so miserable and depressing.
I mean, talking about human nature, like one thing I said this year was that I now understand how Jimmy Jones was able to get almost 1,000 people to kill themselves by drinking cyanide laced fruit juice. It sounds insane, but you know, with that amount of social pressure, like for anyone who doesn't know, have you heard of the Jamestown cult? Or Jonestown cult.
Jonestown, yeah, I've heard of it, but I can't remember what the details.
So basically, he was it was in the 70s. There was some like crazy leftist, and he had this like socialist cult down in Guyana in South America, and he got the entire cult, which had like 900 or so people, to commit suicide in an act of revolutionary rebellion against capitalism.
Yes.
By drinking cyanide laced Kool-Aid. Like that's where the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid comes from. You know, somebody who's just going along with something extremely stupid, they're drinking the Kool-Aid. Going back to what we learned about human nature, that sounds insane to us, but because you have to think like within that like compound, within that cult, the amount of like social pressure within that little community would have been like absolutely excruciating. And, you know, it got people to actually drink cyanide and kill themselves. And you just look at that on a society-wide scale with all the pressure, like the hatred, the coercion, the fear-mongering, the stuff we were mentioning earlier.
Exactly.
With the vaccine, and you can see how it works. And
this is what scares me about this drive to get as many people vaccinated as many times as possible. I mean, it's because clearly the threat from the virus doesn't justify that. It obviously, simply, absolutely doesn't.
And it can't just be about... Oh, yes, go ahead.
It's not about profit either, if that's what you're going to say. Yeah.
No, it's also not about the digital ID, because they can already do that.
Yes, exactly. So what... I mean, exactly. They could already do the digital ID. Now, as for the profits, yes, they could do that. But again, that doesn't justify all the other apparatus that's up for that's pushing the vaccine. It's not just big pharma. I mean, I guess you could say it's big. It's media companies that have been paid by big pharma. Possibly, but to me, this thing about the vaccine is there's just a sense of something even more sinister than that. It's not like it's not just about profit.
Yeah, I won't speculate too much on that because we really don't know yet. But that is the sinking feeling that I'm getting too. It's that it's not just about. It's certainly not about profit, and it's also I'm starting to think it's not just about the digital ID. That they seem to want that thing in you, and I shudder to imagine why.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. We shouldn't speculate too much on this because it is.
We don't want to get caught out on that, but yeah,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's frightening nonetheless.
Okay, well, we'll move to the questions because there are quite a few questions. Hold on a second. Endeavor, this is a completely different topic. Have you visited a Russian Orthodox church to observe the liturgy?
Yes, I have. It was pretty impressive. I'm not Orthodox myself, but I've gone to one. Actually, on Christmas Day, I went. It's Russian Orthodox Christmas is on January 7th, so they weren't celebrating on December 25th. But I went down to the monastery and. I usually go there on Christmas every the last couple of years since I haven't been able to travel to Canada for Christmas. So you know I have it's quite nice.
Okay. Hudson Havenhill says, "Absolute legend, sir. Thank you so much for the amazing content. My first millennial, but certainly not my last. Merry Christmas." Well, thank you very much. Jack says, "Don't eat the insect tacos if you know what's good for you." I mean, obviously, this is to do with the eat the bugs. That's another of these things that was pushed. I think there was one sort of freak newspaper article about it too, and it was before COVID as well. And people went nuts about it. Sort of alt-light types. I remember PJW saying. Eat the bugs, bigot. Or I think even the idea of the pod, the concept of living in the pod, I think must have been there as well. Because I think I remember him saying, get in the pod and eat the bugs, bigot. And I remember our site saying, oh, come on, that's like a sort of grifty, fear-mongering thing to say from the alt-light. No one's telling us to eat bugs. But it turns out that they were right, yeah, because 2 years later they're talking about this stuff. And again, it's another example where something is injected quietly into the discourse. We're allowed to get worked up about it and, you know, whatever. And it percolates around and then it's confirmed.
I actually have a funny story is that like a bunch of these textbooks which I have, which most of them are from like 2014, 2015, I found that like a lot of them have some article in them about eating bugs. Like there's this National Geographic book that I have from 2015 and it's talking about eating bugs. And it's not the only one that has that. And it's something I would have just thought, oh, that's stupid like a couple years ago, but it looks like they might be onto something.
It's a very strange thing.
But we see where it's going with
the
climate change stuff.
Yeah. And then there was one more, Dan saying, thanks for your great work. And he makes a very generous donation. Thank you very much for that, Dan. I think that was today. It says the 27th. I think it was that was just now. So thank you very much, Dan. That's very kind. Now, the Odyssey questions. Jay Caillou says, Happy New Year, Endeavor. I have loved your movie videos with Morgoth. And now your latest video has, in my opinion, placed you firmly in the top rank of content creators. Great work.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoy my work.
Excellent. Three Shaharis. I don't know what that means. I hope that's not some reference to something really, not really hardcore. Says, here in the Balkans, where vax rates are or were under 50%. Within the space of 48 hours, Romania, Serbia and Bulgaria introduced a form of vax pass. Yet someone might say it was a conspiracy theory that this is being introduced from a supranational level. Well, exactly. They would call you a tinfoil hat wearer for suggesting that, and yet three countries do it all at once. And it's like, this is like they're taunting you. Yeah. You know,
the same thing happened in Russia, basically. Like the vaccine rates were not very high, but then they brought in the vax pass. And it's the same in every country. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And then Darth Cater says, as of a few days ago, Ontario women will no longer be allowed to have an unvaccinated partner in the postpartum suite with them. That includes cesarean mums who need help post-surgery. They won't get it from their partners, and there's less staff due to the firings. They hate us that much. And that's sort of explicit about the idea that they actually hate the public. And this is something that I've noted in certain leaders, like especially Justin Trudeau, actually, since we're talking about Canada. I don't believe that he gives a shit about the Canadian public, the average Canadian citizen, or the public as a collective. I think he despises the voters. I think he radiates loathing whenever he talks about them.
Yeah, like the PSYOP from earlier this year, where they claimed to find like a bunch of graves of children, and like that's a whole can of worms in itself. Like that's another example, like the media just nudging you in a certain direction that they've just bombarded you with all this guilt for years about, oh, how horrible these schools were. Then they just say, we found these graves, no context whatsoever. You're just supposed to make the connection in your head. It seems like they're implying the nuns were like murdering them by firing squad or something like that. But I'm convinced that was done deliberately just so that it would climax on Canada Day with the statues being torn down of Queen Victoria, so that it would be just as demoralizing and humiliating as it possibly could be. I'm just convinced that they started that like just a month before, and then they just got more of them and more of them, and it was supposed to climax on Canada Day. I think that they did that as a plan, as just to be as devastating and as demoralizing as possible, and that's the kind of people that run the country.
I agree, and the thing is, it sounds paranoid to say, yeah, I agree with you, but I mean, look at if they're not doing this, for deliberate sadism purposes, then the result must be very coincidental. That it's a lot of cruelty and humiliation that people are feeling. Okay, Worried says they've announced today that they're going to go door to door with the jab in Northern Ireland, and they're trialling the same in the English town of Ipswich. There was an article, I think, in the Daily Mail, which turned out I read that it was fake news that they were going to do this. So I'm not sure, but I think that was yesterday or the day before. People were sharing it around, and then someone said that it was not true. It was a sort of clickbait headline, but so I don't know. I can't confirm or otherwise just now. And then finally, I saw this comment, and I thought it was a funny one to end on. So here it is: Justin Trudeau is a genetic freak with a number of dads, including Castro and the entire Rolling Stones.
I will say, though, even if Pierre Trudeau isn't his real father, he rubbed off on him a lot, because, I mean, no one hates our country and it has the ability to just screw us over as much as Trudeau Sr. and Trudeau Jr. I mean, if Justin Trudeau today, he's like a pawn of globalism, but all this, Canada started to go wrong when Trudeau Sr. was in. So I think that, in my opinion, he was even worse.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about the history. I just know that Justin Trudeau
he's comparable to Tony Blair. He's like Trudeau Senior would be like Tony Blair.
All right, right, okay. All right. Well, is there anything you'd like to add before we finish?
Yeah, I know that we've been going on for a while. I want to give you a rest, but I just want to say to everyone, I know that the situation is not great, but find a way to, you know, remove yourself from the system in whatever ways you can, you know, get out of a one of the major cities, or find some way that you can start your own business with people you trust. You know, there's things that you can do when you don't take the vaccine. You're really stepping into the unknown, and you have the opportunity, and there's opportunities will present themselves, but you're really given no choice but to make it work. And I think we'll find a way to do that. I think that we're going to find a way. They'll try to think of it like the deplatforming, how they kept deplatforming us. And now we're on Odyssey, and Millennial is going along just like any other year. It's
I think it's more better. I really think that it's the buzz of this year is fantastic.
Yeah, it's even better than any other year. And they've tried to shut Woes down, but he keeps going. And I think we can do the same with everything else they try to shut us down. They'll block us off from something with the vaccine passport. We'll find a way around it. They'll shut that off. We'll find another way. And I think we can do this, but you know, I think that the vaccine is the line in the sand. It's your chance to finally take a stand, show some conviction, and take a step into the unknown. And you know, the opportunities will present themselves. So don't want to leave anyone on a bad note. So, you know, the fight goes on, and thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and it's great. Wow. I always enjoy Millennial every year.
Well, thank you very much, and it's definitely been an enjoyable stream. So thank you for agreeing to appear. All right, excellent, Endeavor. Thank you for taking part in Millennial 2021. I'll be back very soon with the next stream. In the meantime, bye bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.